You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I am your host, Dan Johnson. And as we find a lot of guests these days, it's just random emails or a message through Instagram, or somebody sends me something and says, hey, Dan, I like your podcast, or I have a question. And I'm just like, hey, dude, just come on the podcast. Let's talk it out. And that is no different than today's guest, Mr. Andrew Douglas. Andrew, how are we doing, dude?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All right. So today we're going to talk about hunter recruitment. We're going to talk about the Field to Fork program specifically that the Iowa DNR puts out. I'm going to play devil's advocate on a couple things that I don't want it to sound like, I don't want you to be scared by it. But they're in the hunting community. There are groups of people who feel that we have enough hunters, given the access that we all have. And so I want to get your thoughts on that. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, as someone in their 30s picking up archery for the first time, or late 30s picking up archery for the first time, what kind of obstacles and all that stuff. And so we're going to get into all of that today. Before we do, though, like, where do you live in Iowa?
So I live in Huxley, Iowa, which is just south of Ames.
Just south of Ames. Okay. All right. So yep. You live on that 35 corridor between Ames and Des Moines. And yep. And what do you do for a living?
I'm a recruiter for a software company that provides software for firefighters and EMTs.
Okay. So are you a work from home guy?
I'm a work from home guy. Yep.
Yeah.
Do interviews all day long.
Isn't work from home awesome?
It's awesome most of the time, but there are times where I'm just like, man, I just like miss the water cooler talk of just like connecting with people and walking away from your desk and being able to put it down. But for the most part, yeah, the flexibility and not having to drive and be in your car, that stuff, I really do enjoy.
Yeah. I reached out to a lady who owns a building in Swisher, or this, in the town that I live in, and about renting an office space that I would turn into potentially a studio. And then I would like have all my inventory for Full Sneak Gear there and all that stuff, because like this summer, the kids are going to be home. And so I need to focus a little bit. And so I was thinking about getting an off, like working from home is awesome, but also getting up, having a routine, going to an office, it would be awesome because you're forced into a routine at that point. Yeah. Like now I get not only distracted myself from working from home, but if anybody needs me, I'm pulled off of a task and then have to pick it up at the end of the day. So there's nights where I'm working till like 8, 9, even 10 o'clock some nights. And I'm just like, Jesus, dude. Like,
yeah. My wife also works from home, and we just had spring break and our kids were home, and it was literally the same thing, like trying to manage who's going to watch the kids and who has important meetings at what point, and how do you like, yeah. So an office space would be nice for that. Just to like, when your kids are home, just to get away and do heads down work for whatever period of time. So
how many kids you got?
Two daughters. They're 9 and 5.
Ooh. All right. That's a good age for daughters. Yeah. My daughter is 12. This morning I said, hey, sweetie, grab your coat. It's cold outside. And she goes, okay, dad. And gave me like the biggest eye roll ever. I'm just like, Jesus, dude, like I'm literally just trying to help you. And she wants to skin me alive. And so that's what I'm dealing with over here.
Just around the corner from me.
Yeah, exactly. So, here's what's coming your way. It's just like a tornado of hormones that they don't even know how to react. It's just craziness.
Yeah.
So, okay. Before we get started into this conversation though, I do want to send a huge shout out to all the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. If you're looking for a saddle, look no further than Tethered. Tethered has a full lineup of saddle hunting accessories, saddles, and then an educational platform to allow you to become a better saddle hunter. WaspArchery.com. It's kind of cool. A majority of their heads are made in the United States. So it's a United States company. And I have a discount code, NFC20 for WaspArchery.com. Code Blue Sense, real synthetic deer urine, sin elimination products, rope-a-dope mock scrape kits, CodeBlueSense.com, discount code NFC20, Huntworth camo. If you go to HuntworthGear.com, you can take a look at all the patterns that they offer, all the layers that they offer. It's just a really good, affordable option for the average Joe hunter. And it's right up there with the elite brands. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. Reveal offers a very easy to use, affordable cell cam. Put batteries in, scan the QR code, download the app, and you are ready to go with your cell camera in like under 10 minutes. So I would say under 5 minutes even for your first one. And then everyone since after that gets easier. Vortex Optics. Last week I did something called Vortex Week, where all of my interviews come from people associated with Vortex, including the Hunting Gear podcast. So go check those out. Also go check out vortexoptics.com. It is turkey season right now, and they offer a variety of red dots that fit your shotgun perfectly. So Vortex Optics. And then lastly, my company, fullsneakgear.com. If you like wearing t-shirts, that's a pretty shitty marketing. Like, if you like wearing t-shirts, wear my t-shirts. So fullsneakgear.com. I got a whole bunch of different things you might enjoy. Go check it out. Andrew, let's start at the very beginning. Do you come from a family that is into the outdoors, hunting, fishing, things like that?
My dad bow hunted when I was growing up. I was introduced to hunting probably around like 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. I gun hunted the shotgun season. I grew up in Wisconsin. So I hunted the shotgun season there from like the time I was 12 until I went to college. I never actually shot a deer, saw some deer. Most of the time they were running because it was a lot of pushing and
deer drives
and that sort of thing. And then went off to college in Iowa, and then had a friend that also did some shotgun hunting and did 2 years of shotgun in Iowa as well, but never was able to get anything on the ground. So
yeah.
Been around it, but not like committed to it. It was more like casual, like show up, shoot your gun once.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Where'd you go to school at?
I went to school in Briarcliff University, which is in Sioux City on the western part of the state.
All right. Way up there. Okay. So you came from a hunting family, but it was more focused on deer drives and the firearm season. Did you dabble in anything between college and this past year? Did you do anything outdoor, like a hunting related?
Other than like drive around and see deer in Iowa? No. Just had kids and family stuff kind of came first and never really got into it. And then You know, just being in Iowa, you're driving around and you see big deer, you see deer. And I've always kind of just had that, like, hey, I should maybe do this, or it would be fun to do this, but I didn't have a spot to hunt. The public land thing kind of scared me quite a bit. And then my wife is just like, finally was like, you've been talking about this for 3 or 4 years. Why don't you just go buy a bow and do it? And the hunting public stuff had kind of come out, so I started watching some of their videos, and that gave me a little bit more confidence in the ability to like find a spot to hunt locally. And so finally in December of 2023, my wife is like, we're going to buy you a bow. You've been talking about it. Like, so she actually is the one that really like pushed me into like taking the step and committing to it. And so that's kind of how I got it started, like really just started, was through, you know, being around, you know, just being in Iowa and seeing deer, and always have that like kind of just that interest in it, but never committing myself to it until
It's
she really gave
here.
me that
It's, I mean,
push.
it's, yeah, it's here. It's right in front of me. Why am I not doing this type of thing?
Exactly, exactly.
Let me ask you a question here. What was it about public land that you found scary?
Me, I think most of it was like I had always shotgun hunted, so in my head I was going to shotgun hunt. And just being on land where you don't know the other people that are going to be on there, they don't know where you are. I know there was a lot of deer driving going on. So like for me, it was more of like the shotgun piece than it was probably the archery piece. So then once I like started thinking about archery as an option, that I think that kind of opened my eyes to the opportunity of like, okay, there's not going to be maybe as many hunters out there with guns where you don't know where they are. It's a little bit safer. And so that kind of, I guess, allowed me some of that comfort.
Gotcha. Now, you have this, your wife is almost like the driving force in this decision that you made, right? Which is really cool that she supports that. I think my wife in a way supports it, but I also take everything to the next level. So she probably complains a little bit more about the amount of time I spend doing this. But was so she kind of was like, hey, let's go buy this bow. Was that the starting point, or were you researching like how to get back into hunting and then found this program or the Field the Fork program, or did you just kind of get the bow and then go into it first?
Before I bought the bow, I had been doing research, so about like just different bows and like getting into it, and started like I had started listening to podcasts. So I listened to the How to Hunt Deer podcast that you have. That actually was like kind of my like that podcast was great because it takes you like from like the gear you need and like identifying sign where you hunt, like all of those things. So that laid some foundation, and then we. And then she was like, okay, you've talked about this long enough. Let's just go do it. So I bought the bow in December. And then I think I heard about the program in like January or February. And since I had already decided that I was going to go hunt on my own regardless, I figured this would be a good program to have a mentor, to have other people that were experiencing hunting for the first time. And so then there's an application process. I put my application in, and then I think in right around May is when I found out I was accepted into the program.
Oh, so you have to, do they only take X amount of people every year? How's that work?
Yeah, I think they, depending on each location, I think there's like 5 or 6 locations throughout the state. And the Ames location last year, we had 9 participants. So I don't know how much, like, I don't know how many applicants they get or what percentage of people actually get accepted. But I think it's probably from like, it sounds like 6 to 10 participants per location is what it seemed like it averaged.
I want you to be brutally honest with me, because when I started the How to Hunt Deer podcast, I think I started it first with another guy. It's been a while, but it's I did that through which is, it used to be Quality Deer Management Association, now it's the NDA, and so like the first 19 episodes are really detailed things about like how to hunt deer and things like that. And then it expanded. I need you to be honest with me because I didn't know how this was going to work. So sometimes as people, when we're really experienced in things, like I have like close to 20 years of just straight bow hunting experience. I think it's 18. And then more than that, when you're talking about just hunting in general, does it ever come off as too complicated or too complex sometimes?
I think there are certain topics which I think if you don't have any foundation, mm-hmm. are really complex, like thermals and wind and okay. like how to set, like some of those types of concepts. I think those were yeah. later episodes. Until you've actually, for me, at least until I was actually like in the woods and saw how the wind worked and saw how deer behaved a little bit, I think that those, some of those things are really hard to like grasp and understand going into it.
Yeah.
But once you start to like, even just scouting and seeing deer trails and beds and stuff like that, once you start to experience some of those things, then you can understand how wind is important or thermals are important and that sort of thing. So
yeah.
I would say for the most part though, like it was all really good, just foundational, like what you need to look for. You guys did a really good job of saying you don't need to go out and buy the most expensive gear. You basically need a bow, a release, some clothes, and a license, and you can go like you could start there and then build upon it after that too. So
awesome. Well, good, because I'm always that guy. Me and the other host, Jason, we're sitting there before. It's like, is this too complicated? Like, what level are the people? But the good news is that how, you know, with podcasting and how that works is they can go back as far as they need to or pick topics of what they need help with. Thermals is definitely like step three or even four in the hunting game. It's like, first I need step one. I need step two, right, in order to get to step three or four. But those types of more complex conversations that we have on that particular podcast, we're hoping that by the time you get to listen to some of these episodes, you've already had, you know, maybe a week in the woods or maybe one in season under your belt. And then that's going to be like that. Okay, I keep getting busted here. Why am I getting busted? So things like that. Yeah. Okay, so December 23, you get a bow. And then when did you start that field to fork program?
It started the first week in July.
Okay. Good timing. And then how many week program was it?
It goes up until like the start of archery season. And then like we had weekly shoots where like the first couple of weeks was just helping sight it, like, I guess I'll back up a little bit. So, since I had a bow, mm-hmm. I took it to one of the local bow shops. They helped me like tune it and make sure everything was tuned. For other people, they have the opportunity to rent equipment. So had actually rented a bow. And then they get you like set up with your draw link, get you arrows, kind of get everything ready. And then on that first day in July, there were six mentors for the nine participants. And then the mentors are there to help you just sight your bow in, shoot, like form all, like kind of all of those things. And then every week you kind of build upon that. We had a weekly shoot. There was weekly assignments that eventually you get the bow hunters education. So there's like a lesson every week in that. There's a lesson about just deer in general. So it kind of progresses through the program from like, you know, this is how you shoot your bow to by the end, hopefully you're proficient at 20 or 25 yards and ready to hunt.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So was this an online course or did you guys go somewhere and meet physically?
We went somewhere once per week and met, and then everything else was online. So there was a couple books and like podcasts that you could listen to or videos to like for the week's lesson for the following week.
Yeah. Perfect. Now, the other thing that I want to ask is, okay, so, you know, they made sure you were proficient with your weapon, right? They focused a lot on the bow side of things. Was there any gun focus as well or just bow?
Just bow. This was just strictly for archery.
Okay. Did they offer gun classes as well?
I don't believe so. I think it's just for archery.
Okay. Archery. Okay. So in those classes, did they also discuss anything like strategy, like talk about the biology of a deer, what the deer, you know, how they smell, where they like to live, you know, patterns, anything like that?
Yeah. So part of the like online courses that we had a lot of that information in it. Like what deer eat, how they travel, some of those types of things. And then I think it was like mid-September, we actually like found out where our hunting spots are going to be. So they provide you with a hunting spot. A lot of it's like depredation zones or like parks where it's doe only and like just opportunities where, you know, they try to set you up to be successful, essentially, it seems like. And so we got to go scout those spots. Our mentors walked us through, helped us set up our tree stand. And then I think the week before season, we did like a field day where everyone got together on a Saturday. And we actually, they through one of the depredation programs, the DNR officer was actually able to bring us a deer. So we gutted it, skinned it, like
Awesome.
butchered it and everything. So it really does take you from like learning how to shoot all the way to like field dressing and even butchering and being able to provide for your family too.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And so at least at the beginning anyway, it was mainly focused on the like it was focused on kind of high populated deer areas. At least I mean I'm talking about where you were assigned to hunt, right?
Correct.
Like this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack Fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Like a state, like state parks and things like that.
State parks. I think mainly it was state parks. I think there were, the spot I ended up hunting was owned by the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, the INHF. And so, you know, it was an area that hadn't been hunted in a while.
And so did were you limited to only does, or if a buck came by, could you have shot that too?
In my spot, I was able to shoot either or. Some of the other participants only were in like strictly doe only zones as well. Through the summer, I had also scouted some public land. There's like three or four pieces of public land close to my house. So I hunted those kind of off and on with the property that they had provided me to.
These mentors that you had, walk us through what these mentors did for you specifically, like what value they brought. Because obviously there's the classes, there's the actual online learning, there's the bow shooting, but outside of that, what value did your mentors bring to you?
Honestly, the mentors were probably the best part of the program for me. As someone that knew, like I knew I was going to hunt anyway, so there was just a ton of questions about like what camo do I buy, what broadheads do I shoot, like how do I set up, like are the a lot of them had 20 plus years of experience, so I'm thinking about these public spots. What do you think about that, or where would you go scout first? Those sorts of questions were really helpful to have someone that had experience that could help there. And then once you were in the field, like things to look for. So this is a scrape, this is a rub. Here's in the early season, when acorns are falling, these are going to be good places that you might want to look because they're going to come here for food. Just like helping you identify some of those things in the field were really nice. But also, you know, each week was a 3-hour shooting session, so you could just ask any questions that came up, you know, through the week. So you just had really good, authentic conversations with the mentors every week, which was wonderful.
Man, that's awesome. And as that progressed, did you feel that before the archery, before the October, one opener that you were ready, that you felt more confident after this class to get out and make it happen?
Yes, absolutely. I was like going into it, I think everyone was like, okay, we've done all the work, we've shot, we feel confident. We have spots set up. It made it much easier just to know, like, okay, I have a tree stand set up in a spot. I know where I'm gonna go sit. And even instead of like having to like think through, oh, here's the five spots I've scouted, which one do I go sit in? Where's the wind? Like you kind of had that one spot that you knew you could at least go to that made it easier to just go do it.
How complex were these conversations between you and your mentor about like strategy?
I think it varied from person to person. For me, like I'm the type of person like you that like when you do something, you kind of go all in. And so I like listen to, I don't, I'm probably embarrassed to say like hundreds of hours of podcasts. And like I had done some scouting on my own. So like I was really curious. And so we went pretty in depth about like certain properties and like where I should set up and some of those types of things for other people that were newer and maybe had never even picked up a bow or like never like the program was really about like even just introducing them to hunting at all. For them it was more like okay, like they like how do I do this? For me it was like okay, how do I do this and be successful? Where do like you know my goal in the my first year was I wanted to shoot a buck. And so how do I differentiate buck bedding from doe bedding, or how do I set up on trails, or like so I felt like I was able to have really like deep conversations with them, which was great.
Let me add, you brought something up there. You said your goal was to shoot a buck. Your first deer was to or your that season was to shoot a buck. Why was it that antlers played a role in that decision?
That's a good question. It probably goes back to, I don't know, I hate to say this, but like the industry, like in it, like it feels like that's that. I don't know. You might have to pause this and
No,
restart this part.
dude. This is actually really important, right? Because we are in an industry that romanticizes giant antlers, okay? And so not everybody who gets into hunting is going to have the same opportunity at giant antlers than others, right? Especially in a state like Iowa, where we are 2% public land. That means 98% of the ground is private, and you have to either lease it or go through an outfitter or rent it or what, you know, whatever the case is, or get permission somehow on some of this ground. And so it's that question is interesting to me because hearing somebody say, and the reason I'm saying this is like expectations, right? Everybody has to have their own expectations. Why, and I was just kind of curious why your expectations for the first year of hunting with a bow would have been a buck.
I think it just measures success, I think, is what it comes down to. It's like that's that it like you said, it does seem like that's how success is measured, as like can you shoot a buck? And so I guess for me, it felt like, and also maybe a little bit was the challenge of it too. Like, you know, like I shot a doe opening day, so I was successful as well. And so I did, it wasn't like I was holding out for a buck. Like I wanted to harvest a deer first, but I would say like just shooting a buck seemed like it was a little bit of a maybe a stretch of a goal, but also like it feels like that's kind of how success in the hunting industry is measured maybe a little bit. And so that's
Oh, it is.
probably
It
like you
is.
said, so it's probably not the best like view, but also that's just the reality of the times we're in, I guess you could say. And so
No,
that, I don't know.
there's nothing wrong with your answer. I'll just tell you that there's nothing wrong with your answer. And you are 100% correct that the industry does glorify and measure success based off of inches of antler, even though everybody has a different hunting scenario, right? So, whether you're hunting state parks or public land, there's probably a it's going to be harder to kill a giant, quote unquote, giant buck on those particular pieces as opposed to highly managed private, right? So, I just, it's interesting to me that that is what a newcomer sees coming into the space is in order for me to be successful. And I'm not saying that the dough that you shot is played out, like is underplayed. But what I'm getting at is you're somebody new coming into the space. They are seeing the industry say, we measure our success based off of antlers. And that number one blows my mind. And number two, I hate it at the same time. Like it, yeah. I hate it. I hate that someone feels in order to enjoy hunting, they have to shoot a buck. So even though, you know, obviously you sound intelligent and you're able to decipher that that may not necessarily be the case because you did find success shooting that doe. Right. And so, what was it like shooting that doe with a bow, like your first archery kill? What was the emotions that kind of went through that?
So I shot the doe on opening day at like 4 PM, walking into my spot. I didn't even get set up. And this was a spot. So I have some public land, like I mentioned, that's close to my house. And so I didn't even go to the INHF spot. I was just like, I was short on time. So I was like, I'll just go close to my house. I had a spot kind of that I had scouted and was like, I'll just sit there and see what happens. I was walking in and I kicked up two does, or maybe they might've been doe fawns. I don't think it matters though, but kicked up two does and they just stopped, stood up and looked at me. And so I knelt down. They were 25 yards in front of me, maybe knelt down, like didn't have my bow, like didn't have an arrow on my bow or anything. Was just like literally walking in. They stood there and I guess the whole time I was just expecting them at some point just to blow out. And like, I'm never going to get a shot at them. They see me, I ducked down, knocked an arrow. Like they still didn't run away. I stood up, still didn't run away, drew back. Just kept staring at me. And then finally, like I settled the pin, like was nervous as heck, settled the pin and shot the one closest to me. And then after that, it's just like, I don't even remember anything. I remember it turning, like doing like a 360 running away. I went to like grab my binoculars to try to watch it run away. And then I lost sight of it. And then there was just like the emotional freak out that I think you get like anytime the adrenaline dump was there. Oh, yeah. And so it was like, I called my mentor. He's like, okay, did you hit it? And I was like, I think so. What happened? Where did she run? Can you find the spot where you shot at? Is there any blood? Like just kind of like asking me all the questions in the moment to try to get the information. Cause inevitably I probably was going to forget, but it was an awesome experience. So it ended up, I shot her through like the front shoulder and then it went all the way through to like the opposite back leg, but there was not a drop of blood anywhere just cause the arrow was like stuck in the hole. Like the fletchings were basically in the entry hole and there was no exit. And so she ran about 50 yards and was laying where I last had seen her. Ended up having to walk over there because I didn't find blood. And she was just laying there like 50 yards away. So then it was the sigh of relief and the success and everything.
Yeah. Did you call your mentor after that to talk, what do I do now? Or did they already taught you everything up to that point?
So they actually, like they had said, if you shoot one, call us, we'll come out and they'll help you. So they actually... he was actually hunting on opening day as well. He's like, I'll get out of my stand and I'll come down there. So I waited for him by the truck. He came back and then he helped me field dress it, drag it out. And then, he actually let me take it to his garage and help me like skin it and butcher it the next night. So, that was part of the mentorship too. That was great. Is just knowing that there was going to be like, after you shot one, that there was going to be someone to help. Just do the rest of the work, which was awesome.
Yeah. I can still remember field dressing my first doe that I shot and oh my God, it was a disaster. Like looking at it now, if I did the same things to this doe, I probably wouldn't have eaten the back half of this doe. Like I popped the bladder, right? There was dirt and feces all over it. Like it just not the best,
field dress, but I got it done, took the guts out, drug it back to the truck, hung it up, skinned it out, pulled the meat off of it. Then my mom canned some of it. We put it in, I can't even remember what we did. We probably ground it up and packaged it ourselves back then. But, it was nuts. It was just nuts. But the more I did it, the more I felt comfortable doing it. And now it doesn't take me too terribly long. I know guys who can do it faster than me, but so you were pretty excited about your first bow kill.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. It was awesome.
Yep. And then, so after that, after you shot that doe, like, what do they recommend? Do they recommend keep going out and keep hunting, you know, hunt as much as you can, or do they focus on, because it's called field to fork, right? So is it more focused on, you know, meat to the freezer, or what's the story?
Yeah, so I had a doe tag for my county, and so I still had my like statewide archery tag as well, so I was able to keep hunting. Mm-hmm. And that was encouraged. I think I actually did end up shooting a buck later in the year. And then, one of the other guys in the program shot like four or five does through the state park that he was in as well. So there was, it was encouraged just to, you know, as long as you would use the meat and continue to hunting and to continue to learn.
Yeah. Okay. So you shot a buck later that year, you shot that doe. And then for you and your family, what was the introduction into eating that meat? Like, what did they teach you how to cook it properly? Did they teach you like recommendations on what meals to make with it? Things like that.
Yeah. They had provided like a recipe book,
awesome.
To use. And then like kind of just talked about like with the back straps, like cut them into, you know, steaks and freeze them and, you know, grill them and what temperature to cook them to and everything. So, you know, I grilled the loins that night of the doe that I shot. And that was probably the best meal I've ever had in my life. To be honest, you just knowing it came from, you know, something that you harvested yourself.
Yeah.
But also, you know, those young does taste pretty good too. So,
Ben, isn't that awesome? I don't care if it's like a 6-year-old buck or a brand new deer, basically a yearling.
Yeah.
When you have that meat on your plate and you're eating it, knowing that the only people to touch that meat is you, and that animal didn't live in filth, and that you did everything yourself, man, I don't know why, but I feel like that is just a badass feeling that you are responsible for that right there.
Yeah. It's in the sense of accomplishment, like if you're my first one too, you know, the accomplishment with it. And like every time I eat it, it takes me back to that, you know, to me walking in and seeing, mm-hmm. you know, seeing, and it takes me through that whole process again too, every time I pull a piece out of the freezer. So yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah.
And so as you started this new journey and you started, you know, you bounced around on some public, did public become easier for you to handle the more you did it?
I actually only hunted public one other time after that. The rest of the season I spent like in the more of the like the state ground that I had access to.
Gotcha. Okay. So then is that state park only for people in the program, or can anybody hunt that?
The spot I was at, I believe it's just for people in the program.
Okay.
Some of the state parks, there's like, I think there was like 20 or 30 other people that had access to some of the other state parks that we had. So it was kind of varied. There was like three or four different places, and it depended on what the situation was for each of the different spots that they had.
Gotcha. And so how long do you have access? How many years do you have access to that spot before they kick you out of the nest and then you're on your own?
Just one season. Just access that one season. For some of the state parks, there's like an application process for those. So you could sign up and continue to hunt those areas for the doe only zones. But the piece that I actually had access to was just for 1 year.
Yeah. Okay. So now this upcoming year, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so obviously you're in a way you're taken care of that first year.
Yep.
Like, what kind of thoughts are going into your head right now leading into this next year? Like, you think you're going to do fine? Like, where's your mental state at?
I think I'll be okay.
Okay.
Central Iowa is weird because there's a lot of it seems like there's a lot of public land or a lot of spots, but it's very small pieces. So like 100 acres here, 50 acres there. And so I've scouted, I think this spring I've been out to 5 different spots already. So I feel like I've got some different options too. Cause that's one of the things that because I didn't hunt public that much. So I don't know what kind of pressure some of these spots are going to get. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing is I've heard having multiple spots is really important because of the pressure, but how do you even for me, if someone's in a 100-acre spot, do you still go in there? Do you just leave it alone? Cause it's such a small area. I think those are still some of the unanswered questions that I have that I'm still probably trying to figure out as I go into my second season.
Yeah. And that's tough. Right. Because really it's based off of what you want. And, I live by the kind of the golden rule, which is do unto others that you would have done to yourself. Right. And so I think I said that right. Anyway, what I'm getting at is public land is public land. And I've had guys walk right by me and I'm like, hey, dude, I'm hunting here. And they're like, dude, it's public land. I'm like, yep, you're right. The next time I see you, I'm going to walk right by you too. Right. So if you want to play it that way, that's personal. That's fine. People can do that. There's also guys out there who would be like, you know what? I'm going to let this guy kind of have this unless you can find a way to get by them without ruining their hunt. I mean, it's acceptable either way. I know that there are some people who think that there's unwritten rules to public land. There's not. Right. If you feel that you need to walk by a guy to get to your spot, well, you need to walk by a guy to get to your spot, man. There's the goods and there's the goods and the bads with anything. But I feel the more prep work that a guy does or gal scouting during the off season is going to lead them to know how to troubleshoot shoot. So if someone is in a spot that you thought you needed to go, but your second spot is further beyond them, then find a way to get there without ruining their hunt.
Yeah.
If it's possible, sometimes it's not possible. So, that's all on you, man. I can't give you any advice on what to do. That's gotta be on the individual. So, but, pressure is going to be a thing, especially on public, even in Iowa, maybe not the early season, but if you were going to ever hunt the rut, it's there, you know? And so, as far as the program itself, as it wraps up, like, what do they leave you with? Like, what are the benefits? How do you feel after the program is over and they do kick you out of the nest?
Yeah, so we still have a text chat group. So the thought is that we'll stay in touch through there. I know there a couple people texted that the Iowa Deer Classic was happening. So there's an opportunity to go, kind of experience that. So I went down there for that. And then one of the things that the lead mentor of our program asked anyone if they wanted to be a mentor in the future. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that me and I think one or two other people volunteered for. So this next year will kind of be like mentor apprentices, I guess you could say, perhaps. Yeah, and so be able to go back and still, because we obviously still have a ton to learn ourselves. So continuing to learn, but also being able to share with the new group next year what we learned and some tips and tricks and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to just continuing to build a network of people that are interested in hunting. I think that you kind of talked about the barrier to hunting. I think for some people, and for me specifically, it was if you don't have anyone else in your network or close to you that's doing it, you kind of feel that was probably why I didn't do it sooner. I felt a little bit isolated and a little bit unsure. And so the program kind of has now opened that, open that door for me too.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So as we get into, I got to play devil's advocate here a second. I don't even know if it's devil's advocate really. It's a, what are your thoughts on the hunting community being new, being in, like, absorbing the media, what you've listened to? What are your thoughts on the hunting community as a whole?
I've listened to a number of different podcasts. I'm in some Facebook groups, just trying to like see what's out there. I mm-hmm. think it, to me, it feels really divided. Mm-hmm. Like there's obviously groups of people that really care about, you know, pushing hunting forward and about like, protecting our natural resources and like being really concerned about like making sure that there's deer long-term and that, mm-hmm. you know, the resources taken care of and like, but then you have the other people that are like, you know, we don't need any more hunters. There's already too few deer. And so it's like, there's almost like these two, like, it just feels like in America today, there's two extremes to everything, yeah. like politically and, yep. and it almost seems like hunting's kind of the same way. It's like, either there's people that are like, yeah, we need to, you know, have more hunters and we need to protect the resource. And there's other people that are like, no, stay away. Like, I don't want more people coming into my spots and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting because it does really feel like it's kind of a dynamic environment right now.
Yeah. What's that make you feel as a new hunter who has found enjoyment and happiness bow hunting, being new, being brought into hunting, and then at the same time having a group of people being like, "Dad, now we really don't want you. You're just going to cause more problems for people who are already here."
I think it's intimidating a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. like I talked about, you know, like with the public land, like if there's a person there, you said it's up to me, it's my choice, but you know, you don't know what kind of person that's sitting there is going to be. Are they going to, you know, are they going to cuss you out because you're in their spot? Yeah. Are they going to be like, hey, let's text each other so that we don't run into each other next time? You know, yep. like who, you don't know who you're going to run into. So I think that part is a little bit intimidating, not knowing, like, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to piss someone else off or ruin someone else's hunt. But yeah. at the same time, like you said, you also have a right to that. So I think it's, I don't know. It's, I still feel like I'm trying to figure out that piece of it myself a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. And then like, there's always these, you mentioned the divisions, right? We want more hunters so that when it comes time to go to the ballot box and choose and have this voice for hunting, we want as many people as possible to be on our side, right? And so the thought is that the more hunters we recruit, the more opportunity there will be for political advancement or whatever the case is, you know, there. Sure. So, but as far as the industry is concerned, as you start to consume more hunting content, what is your thoughts and vibe on the hunting industry about the direction of hunting?
It feels like it's very much, I mean, we kind of talked about this. It feels like antlers are king still. Mm-hmm. And like, it just feels like everything is surrounded around how do you kill big bucks?
Yep.
And that's that's how you're measured as success is, you know, do you kill mature big bucks essentially? And so I think as a new hunter, that part is, you know, it feels like that's the direction that you, not that you need to go, but it feels like that's the direction that everyone's pushing you. So you kind of feel like I talked about shooting a buck was my goal. Like, it feels like that's where everyone's kind of pushing you. So that's kind of the expectation and how success is measured. So
did you ever have a feeling like, hey man, if you don't shoot a big buck or if you don't shoot anything with antlers that, you know, like, why are you doing this? Did you have a feeling like that?
No, I never felt like that. Like I would have been happy shooting, you know, one or two does, or, you know, even for the next 5 years, if I don't get a chance at a buck and I continue to shoot does, I'm still going to do it. I'm still going to be happy.
Yeah. Are you going to be passing any like spikes or anything like that? Like spikes or like small little three pointers?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
Why?
That's a good question.
This is important because I went through this stage too, dude. And I got to feel you out here because I felt like I made a mistake.
By passing spikes?
By passing small bucks to only shoot big bucks.
Sure.
So I guess I'm kind of curious, why do you feel the need? Like, what is influencing this decision for you to pass small deer?
I guess to caveat that, I think the time of year probably plays a little bit of a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, so I shot my buck on October 15th this year. So I missed the rut, and I missed kind of the end of the season. So like early season, I probably would pass a spike, but if it's the last day of the season, probably would be okay. You know, cause I want to get meat in the freezer, but I don't want to burn my buck tag on a spike like the first day and then be done, because I enjoy being out there and that sort of thing. I guess that would be in my head. That's how I don't know.
I mean, that makes sense because, dude, let's not get it twisted. The rut is a badass time to be in the woods, right? It's so much fun. And depending on what county you live in, you can potentially shoot like 50 does if you want to. Right. Yeah. How many doe tags there are. And so I get it. I just was kind of curious if it's like I'm influenced by the industry and therefore I don't want to shoot a spike because no one else shoots spikes. Right. You know what I mean?
And that's probably part of it too. There's probably part of you that feels that.
But take it from a guy who was passing deer his first, I'm going to say, see, I am a firm believer in stages, right? And the stage that you're in right now, and this is just me. If I was to teleport back into the 26-year-old version of me that started taking hunting very seriously, bow hunting specifically, I would have stacked bodies. Like, I would have shot every deer that came by me and in order to feel comfortable around deer first and foremost. Then I would have stair-stepped up. But what I did was I went right into big antlered deer. And what happened was I had plenty of opportunities where I had big deer coming close or doing something coming into me or having opportunity at them. And then I screwed it up because I did not have the enough deer experience, not just big bucks, but deer experience. Excuse me. And so and I'm not going to tell you what you should and should not do, but what I will say is that if I could go back and handle it differently, I would have shot as many deer as I possibly could in my first 5 years of hunting. And then from there, if you start to become proficient, I would have then started, you know, stepping up like, hey, dude, I shot a spike this year or a fork horn. Next year, I'm going to try to shoot a step up bigger, then a step up bigger, and always try to until I hit a point. Cause man, dude, I look back at some of the dumb shit that I did. I was passing 150-inch deer and I had never shot 150-inch deer before back in the day. And I look back at that and I go, that is dumb. Like for me anyway. Now I'm not going to tell you, like I said, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but also I kind of hate the hunting industry as well, even though I'm a hypocrite and I'm kind of in it in a way, because everything is so focused on antlers. It gives a false sense of what is actually accessible to people like you in a way. And I don't like that. And so, that's just a rant, I guess, at this point. I don't want to rain on your parade. I'm not trying to shit on what your thoughts are. I'm just saying, like, for me, I wish I would have done it differently.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think part of it is because I shot a nice buck last year. Part of it's probably like shooting a spike feels like maybe I'm going backwards a little bit too. So there's probably a part of it that's like, you already shot a buck. Why do you need to go backwards? But I also think that there's, you know, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And that's, I think that's something that I'll definitely consider too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so like this program, huge benefit. I mean, if there is someone listening to it who has never hunted before, is this something that you would recommend?
I would 100% recommend. I would say for someone that may, like, we had all different types of levels of people. Like I said, there's people that had never really been in the woods before. They were able to harvest the deer. We had, a college student who had done a lot of like duck hunting. So he had experience around guns and duck hunting, but had never experienced deer hunting. And so this was his introduction to that. Someone like myself that was kind of planning to do it. So there was a lot of different levels of people and interests. And I think, you know, if even if you're considering it, and you're not sure if you want to do it. This is a really good way to like test it out for a year, get put in good situations, have someone really help you learn and teach you the process. So yeah, I would 100% recommend this to anyone that's even like, even if you're not sure about it, like it's a good opportunity for you to really figure out whether or not it's something that you want to do or not too. Yeah. I think it's good for that reason.
Is there a cost associated with it?
There is a cost. It's, I think it was $200.
Oh, okay. So there, the year. Okay. All right.
So that gives you like, that provides, that's for everything. So the stand, harness, arrows, bow, like you don't, I should back up. You get to use those things. You don't get to keep them at the end of the year, but they you're basically paying to like rent all of the equipment for a year, essentially.
And be part of
the program. So,
all right. That's cool, man. That's cool. Yeah. Man, is there anything else about this journey that like getting back into it over the course of the last year and a half that needs to be known?
I think for me, like, and this is more just something that I learned, like that I can do it. Like going out to a public land on my first day and shooting a deer, the buck that I shot was in a spot where I had actually like scouted myself away from, like my mentor had set up a tree stand for us. I actually shot the buck in a different location that I had gone and scouted. I put a trail camera on a scrape, saw deer movement, and then like went and bought a stand myself and hung it there. So I think like going through the program gave me that extra confidence of like that, like, and that push that I needed to be able to be successful. But it's, I think if, like I said, if anyone's thinking about wanting to do archery or they're planning on already doing it themselves, this is a really good program to just, you know, have that extra push and that motivation and the support to help you be successful.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, first off, I'll say thank you for taking time out of your day to hop on and share this, this story with us. Second, welcome back, dude. Like you were gone, but now you're back. And I'll just whisper this in, bow hunting is better than gun hunting, dude. I'll just whisper it. Okay. I don't want people to hear this then to get pissed at me, but bow hunting is really fun, dude. So, yes. Welcome back. Enjoy, right? This is what it's all about. This is about, like human connection. It's about experiencing the outdoors. It's about providing, you know, food for the freezer and things like that. There's so many great benefits that I can think of anyway, that come from a program like this. Just having people get into the woods. Now, all the other bullshit that comes along with it, you know, like whether or not you're wanted or not, I say welcome. I say, spread the word. I think it's badass that you're now going to be a mentor yourself after this. And, dude, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dan. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.